Hello and welcome to this session of What Does the Bible Say? I'm your host, Dr. Wayne Davis of Creekside Messianic Fellowship in beautiful Jasper, Georgia. We hold our services at 1191 East Church Street every Friday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. and every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 12:30. What we do is we take a book of the Bible and we go chapter by chapter and verse by verse to see what does the Bible say. So if you join me in Bible study this morning, if you just please open up your Bibles and let's look at it and see what does the Bible say. Who leads the battle of Gog and Magog in the tribulation period? Russia, Iran, and Turkey. Who's aligned right now in Syria, just north of Israel? Russia, Iran, and Turkey. The Battle of Gog and Magog of Ezekiel 38 and 39 takes place on the Golan Heights. What are Russia, Iran, and Turkey saying? Israel, you don't own the Golan. Give it back or we'll take it. Boy, times are getting close. Back to Revelation chapter 16, because I don't mean to get preachy. Verse 16. And they gathered them together, meaning all the armies of the world gathered together to the place called in Hebrew Armageddon. Armageddon is actually from Hebrew through Greek into English. It's Har Megiddo. Har means mountain. Megiddo is a particular mountain. Many of us have been on the mountain. James almost fell off the mountain trying to gather up my Bible pages when a strong wind blew them all over the mountain. I don't know if you remember that or not. But the valley in front of Megiddo is called Jezreel. Jezreel, God will sow. And that Jezreel Valley is the one that Napoleon said is the perfect battlefield. It's the most perfect battlefield in the whole world. Because it's so large, so flat, and the armies can all take their positions. But let's go back to Judges chapter 5, and let's read about Megiddo. Judges chapter 5. After Deuteronomy, then Joshua, then Judges. Judges chapter 5, verse 19. There have been so many battles fought in this valley down through the millennia. In Judges 5:19, it says, then the kings came and fought. Then the kings of Canaan fought in Tanakh by the waters of Megiddo. That's Har Megiddo. So that was a battlefield all the way back from the time that Israel first entered the land. Go to 2 Kings, chapter 23. 2 Kings, chapter 23. Verses 29 to 30. Just another of the great battles of history that took place there at Megiddo. Verse 29 says, in his days, that is the days of King Josiah, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went to the aid of the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates. And King Josiah went against him, and Pharaoh Necho killed him at Megiddo when he confronted him. Then his servants moved his body in a chariot from Megiddo, brought him to Jerusalem, and buried him in his own tomb. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, anointed him, and made him king in his father's place. Isn't it interesting how in 2 Kings 23, they relate the river Euphrates and the mountain of Megiddo as being the boundary lines of the war that was going on. And we just read in Revelation 16 about the river Euphrates drying up so that the kings of the east can easily make their way into the valley of Jezreel. Go also to 2 Chronicles chapter 35.
2 Chronicles 35, verse 22. It tells us more about King Josiah and how he died in that battle we were just reading about. It says, "Nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him." That is, Josiah had been told to go home. You don't want to be part of this battle. It says, "But disguised himself that he might fight with him and did not heed the words of Necho from the mouth of God." So it was from God who said, "Josiah, don't be part of this battle. Go home. Go back to your own land." It says, "So he came to fight in the valley of Megiddo, and the archer shot King Josiah. And the king said to his servants, 'Take me away, for I am severely wounded.' His servants therefore took him out of that chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had, and they brought him to Jerusalem. So he died, was buried in one of the tombs of his fathers." Josiah was otherwise a very godly king. And God warned Josiah, "Don't be here for this battle." And Josiah said, "I don't care what you say, God. I'm going to be here anyway." Just as God told us, don't be here for this 7-year tribulation period. And yet there are people who say, "I'm going to be here anyway." Zechariah 12. Remember, there's only two eternal destinations, the smoking and the non-smoking sections. And you get to choose. But actions have consequences. Zechariah chapter 12. Zechariah chapter 12 is a prophecy that you hear a lot about on YouTube and on the radio and on the Christian television channels. Verse 2 says, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem." So this is talking about Armageddon. All the world is going to come against Jerusalem. "And it shall happen in that day." What day? "Day of the Lord, that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples." Can you see that on the horizon? Is the world taking issues against Israel and against Jerusalem? It says, "All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, even though all nations of the earth are gathered against it." Let's go down to verse 11. "In that day," what day? "Day of the Lord, there shall be a great mourning," that's with an O-U, that means sadness and crying, "in Jerusalem, like the mourning at Hadad Ramon in the plain of Megiddo." Great mourning will take place in the valley of Megiddo. Back to Revelation 16. There's just one more angel to pour out his bowl, and then the wrath of God is finished. Verse 17. "Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven." There's a temple in heaven. There's always been a temple in heaven. The temple on earth, starting with the tabernacle, was designed after the temple in heaven, according to its pattern. "Saying," what's that word "saying" mean? It's a quote. And the quote is, "It is done." It is done. When this seventh bowl is poured out, it's over. The tribulation period will come to an end. Messiah will rule and reign. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2. Why is it poured out in the air? Why not on the earth? Why in the air? Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. Ephesians chapter 2. Starting in verse 1. Ephesians chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. "And you he made alive," you being the believers, "who were dead in trespasses and sins," meaning our destination was the lake of fire and yet God saved us and gave us eternal life, in which you once walked according to the course of this world. What's that mean? Do you still walk according to the course of this world? No, you've repented. According to the prince of the power of the air, that's Satan, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. So the air is considered Satan's domain. And when this seventh bowl is poured out into the air, it means, Satan, your time is done. You're finished. So back to Revelation chapter 16, verse 18. And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings. And there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as had not occurred since men were on the earth. Have you noticed so many of the great things that God has done have been accomplished or accompanied by earthquakes? This is not going to be a little earthquake. It's going to be an earthquake greater than the earth has ever experienced up to this point. Verse 19, now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. Where nations refers to the Gentiles. So all around the world, the cities are just going to crumble from this earthquake. It's not going to be a local phenomenon. It says, and great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Great Babylon refers to Rome. Let's go back to Revelation 14. The actual city of Babylon was destroyed thousands of years ago, never again to be rebuilt. Saddam Hussein tried to rebuild it with funding from the World Council of Churches, and that's when he was taken out and Iraq was destroyed, because God said it would never again be rebuilt. Revelation 14, verses 9 to 11. Then I heard a third angel followed him, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast in his image, whoever receives a mark of his name. And I should have started one verse sooner. Verse 8. And another angel follows, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. That's a reference to Revelation 17 that we haven't looked at yet. So we will understand that more when we come to Revelation 17. Why didn't John write, and Rome is going to be destroyed? Because he was imprisoned by Rome, and they would not have taken that well. So that's why even the Apostle Peter says, I am in Babylon, when actually he was in prison in Rome, because that was just the way the believers of the day got around being killed by the censors. Okay. Revelation 16. In verse 19, great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine, the fierceness of his wrath. We'll find out in chapter 17 why God is so angry with Rome, and why he calls Rome Babylon. But chapter 16 of Revelation, verse 20, then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. Can you imagine an earthquake so big that even the mountains themselves collapse, and the islands in the sea collapse under the water? Verse 21 says, and great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. How much is that? 75 pounds. Some people say all the way up to 144 pounds. I don't know, but how many of you have been caught in a hailstorm? Oh, I was caught in some big ones when I was a kid out working the farm, be out in the fields, and suddenly a hailstorm would come up. And you'd bend down to try and protect yourself from the hailstones that were falling, and they would just beat you on the back and take the breath away. And they were little bitty things. Can you imagine what a 70 to 144 pound hailstone would do? Good thing this has never happened before, right? Joshua chapter 10, it has happened before. What does Ecclesiastes 1:9 say? There's nothing new under the sun. What's happened before will happen again. So let's go to Joshua chapter 10. Joshua takes place just after the death of Moses. The children of Israel go through the Jordan River. How did they swim across?
Stepped in it and it cleared away.
When they stepped in it, it cleared away. It parted just like the Red Sea did as they were leaving Egypt. And Joshua led them into the promised land. In Joshua chapter 10, let's start in verse 1. Joshua 10, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, that means the Lord is righteous, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were mighty. In other words, this great, huge military power were so afraid that they made peace. They didn't want war. Therefore, Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, king of Lachish, and Debir, king of Eglon, saying, come up to me and help me, that we may attack Gibeon. In other words, all the nations are going to come together. For it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon gathered together and went up, they and all their armies, and camped against Gibeon and made war against it. That is, for making peace with Israel, they attack it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp at Gilgal, saying, do not forsake your servants, meaning we have a peace treaty. You're going to defend us. Come up to us quickly, save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us. So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, that's in Galilee, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you. Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So the Lord routed them before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, chased them along the road that goes to Beth-horon, and struck them down as far as Azekah and Makkedah. And it happened as they fled before Israel and were on the descent of Beth-horon that the Lord cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword. Those are some big hailstones. Back to Revelation chapter 16, verse 21. This is the seventh and final plague. Verse 20, great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent. Men blasphemed God because the plague of the hail, since that plague was exceedingly great. So when Messiah returns for the battle of Armageddon, he speaks a word, hailstones fall, men turn on each other, there's a great slaughter, and all those armies of the entire world are destroyed. Now chapter 17 is another one of those parentheses or interludes.
Can we retrace 16 just a little bit before we go?
Yeah, we can retrace 16 a little bit. What do you want to retrace?
13. Okay, I understand, you know, a frog can Pope Francis, a frog from Putin, let's just say. But I don't understand a physical, was the dragon being a physical thing that they could have seen a frog from?
Satan's real. He's very much real.
But will he be a physical, that somebody can see a frog coming from his mouth?
Yeah, he's going to be here physically, bodily. He was kicked out of heaven. That's where he is. Back in biblical days, did people see angels?
Oh, sure, but I mean...
Satan's just an angel. He's a fallen angel, but an angel nonetheless. Yes, they're going to see him.
Okay. Does it talk about him having a physical presence anywhere other than this? Or
just in Revelation 12, where it says he's kicked out of heaven, and woe to those on earth because he's come down with great anger.
I always assumed he was going to be here kind of as a mist or something, you know what I mean?
Well, remember, it's John who in the vision sees him. It doesn't say that everybody standing around sees him. So we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you.
Yep. Chapter 17 of Revelation. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me. So this is not chronological. Now we're in a parenthesis, and he's going to describe why Babylon is taking such great judgment from God. Why is Rome being destroyed so utterly? Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters. Let's go back to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16. God refers to idolatry as harlotry throughout the scriptures. Why would he do that? Because at Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 19, Israel is betrothed to God. And then Israel chases after which pagan god? Baal. Baal in Hebrew, Baal, means husband. So here is the betrothed bride of God calling an idol husband. So he refers to idolatry as adultery, because that we can kind of understand. What kind of pain adultery causes to the harmed spouse. So back to Ezekiel chapter 16, we'll begin in verse 15. Ezekiel chapter 16, beginning in verse 15. But you trusted in your own beauty, played the harlot because of your fame, and poured out your harlotry on everyone passing by who would have it. You took some of your garments and adorned multicolored high places for yourself and played the harlot on them. Those high places where they were where they worshiped the pagan gods. Such things should not happen nor be. You have also taken your beautiful jewelry from my gold and my silver, which I have given you, and made for yourself male images and played the harlot with them. You took your embroidered garments and covered them, and you set my oil and my incense before them. Also my food which I gave you, the pastry of fine flour, oil and honey with which I fed you, you set it before them as sweet incense, and so it was, says the Lord. Who's he talking to? He's talking to Jerusalem. God's temple sat on the mountaintop of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And what did the people do? Remember? They cut creches in the walls of the temple and put up pagan idols. They gathered in the courtyard of the temple and they bowed with their backs toward God and bowed with their faces toward the rising sun to worship the sun. So they turned God's holy temple into a place of idol worship, and God describes it as harlotry. Let's look also at the book of Hosea. The name Hosea means salvation. It comes right after Daniel and right before Joel. Thank you. Hosea chapter 1, verse 2. Hosea chapter 1, verse 2. When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, Hosea the name means salvation, the Lord said to Hosea, go take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land, meaning the nation of Israel, has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord. So the prophet himself was required to take an unfaithful wife to say to Israel, let me tell you what pain this unfaithful wife gives me so that you can understand how God is hurt by your turning away from him, forsaking his ways, and following after idols. So let's go back to Revelation chapter 17, verse 1. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great harlot. So it's a religious system that leads people in worship of someone other than God, who sits on many waters. In verse 15 of Revelation 17, it tells us that the waters, just look at verse 15. They said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So there is some religious system that exists in these last days that will be very active in the tribulation period that has authority over nations across the world. Verse 2. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. I mean, the kings of the earth have bowed themselves before this great harlot religious system and allowed this system to be in charge over their kingdoms and have sway over their kingdoms down through the ages. It says, the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So through her influence over the kings of many nations around the world, she was able to lead many people away from the Lord into a worship that was based not on the commandments, statutes, and judgments of God, but on man-made rules and regulations. So this is a worldwide idolatrous religious system that began all the way back at the Tower of Babel. Babylon in Hebrew is simply the word Babel, like the Tower of Babel. So let's go back to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. Let's talk about the Tower of Babel for a moment. Notice Genesis chapter 11 is way back in Genesis. What has just happened? The flood. And the flood wiped out every single person on earth except for eight. Noah, his wife, their three sons, and their wives. Eight people. And as soon as they begin to repopulate the earth.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today, folks. If you've enjoyed this Bible study and you want more information on what we teach, please go to our website at www.john1415.org, where you'll find all of our Bible studies for the past 3 or 4 years in MP3 format, organized by book. And we've covered just about every book of the Bible. So you can listen online, or you can right-click on the link and download the file to your iPhone, iPad, or however you like to listen to your teachings. May God bless you. We'll see you next week.